Hello and welcome to episode 101 of Duelist Unity Raw. I am fucking excited for what's going on this week, which is our second mini retreat in Vancouver. Super fucking pumped. It's an awesome location. And just really excited to hang with everyone there. There's a lot of people who are going to be new to the retreat. And it's going to be a blast. Just a really fun time. And we're close to some parks, close to the water. It's going to be a super fun, super fun weekend.
Oh, and another great opportunity to just destroy a bunch of assumptions about the two of us as a whole, as well as what Dualistic Unity is really all about, because the retreats really are an opportunity to just show we're just like you. We're just doing the best we can, trying to figure it out as we go, understanding that the harder we are on ourselves, the less we're actually learning and growing, and the more difficult life seems, when there really is no benefit to making it hard on ourselves. And as a result, we keep it light. We make it easy. We hold space for one another because we're holding space for ourselves. So I couldn't be more excited for this event. And of course, the upcoming Netherlands retreat, which is going to be a lot more in terms of the experience of space, because there are going to be so many people there holding space. And I know that might sound contradictory, but it really does make sense.
So with all that said, I hope you enjoy this live stream that is Duelist Unity Raw, episode 101.
And here we are for episode 101 of Duelistic Unity Raw. This is exciting. You're back on the continent. I'm about to take off for a few days, and then we're doing the Vancouver mini retreat, which I'm pretty stoked about, I gotta tell you. Before we get into anything, I've been sitting on this for days, and I really wanted to talk to you about this. I think it was in the Journal of Psychoactive Studies. I ran across this through an article that linked me to this study, but there has recently been a study where they show that there is a correlation between lifetime psilocybin use and working less overtime. That through using more psilocybin, people have more or less just reprioritized their lives and decided not to work exorbitant amounts of overtime. Now, what I thought was really funny was the study linked psilocybin use and overtime hours, but the article itself tied quiet quitting to a rise in psilocybin use. So you can immediately see the powers that be, the rich, positing this as a negative, as something that's a danger to the economy, which is going to be really interesting because it's in direct contradiction to what we're seeing in the mental health industry. We're seeing psilocybin use have incredible benefits for people. What does that say about the economy? If psilocybin use is actually hurting the economy, perhaps the economy is hurting us.
Well said. That's a fantastic point, because if you're willing to look at all the sides of it, like, you take one more step and it's not just this assumption that exactly how things are going is how they should be or the best way for them to be. And like, we're seeing the impacts on us. And so, and it's just that one thing that we don't want to look at is like, it would create an entire overhaul of the existing mechanisms of control, and we just want to keep patching up the sinking ship. But oh man, it's so interesting when they try and bring in certain perspectives and these overarching narratives and ways to push in, because that was always the, like, basically only argument I heard with weed, or the biggest one, was it makes people lazy. And I kind of, like, when I was younger, it was like, oh yeah, well, you don't want to be lazy, because that was something that I thought was made you a sack of shit, you know, whatever. But it's so funny how it's been able to infiltrate everything about everything that we do, because laziness, like, it can be expanded over time, or it can be just like, I don't know, like 10 minutes you're not doing as much. Like, how do we exactly define lazy? Like, not being productive to build up me, not being productive to build up the economy, not being productive to build up what exactly? To build something. And if you're bought into thinking that you can be something more than what you are, then not striving towards building that is going to be perceived as lazy. And I know I always had a tough time, like, doing things that didn't have, that I couldn't, like, pin to a certain outcome or a benefit to what I think I was becoming. Like I didn't let myself do things like that. Even like, you know, reading a fictional book, like I couldn't equate that to something as direct enough to do something. And so it just makes me wonder, even with the terms like lazy, like what exactly is that energy being put towards that isn't being put towards when you're being lazy? Like what exactly is the definition of what's being focused on, even like when that's used?
Well, and specifically for psilocybin, we'll discount cannabis at the moment because that's the argument there. But with psilocybin, it's not so much that people are lazy. Like we understand that a psychedelic experience, people aren't going to generally go to work, but they're setting aside a specific time. You see, that's the thing. It's not like it's an ongoing use thing. This is, we're talking about occasional use throughout your lifetime. Not many people do mushrooms all the time is what I'm saying, right? And so even for somebody who's suffering through anxiety or depression or PTSD or something like that, to have a mushroom trip every 6 months or a year or 2 years, whatever, even just to have their first psychedelic experience. Well, that experience, while they're doing that, absolutely, you can be, well, that person's lazy, but it's just that they're in a psychedelic experience, right? But the point is that it lingers. And what happens is that the person reprioritizes their life. They decide what's important. But if that's the case, if that's the cure, if that's the healing process, is to reprioritize and decide what's important, then a lot of the pain comes from the lack of priority, or rather the lack of clear priority, the lack of clarity. And so it makes you again look at our system, look at overtime and the way that we're entertained and the way that we're constantly hyped up on coffee and sugar and everything else. Like we're never in a state where we can just stop. Right. And so we're always under a state of stress, whether we realize it or not. We've talked about this. It's like, well, I feel like I'm relaxing. It's like, yeah, but only compared to how not relaxed you were previously. This is a little bit of relaxation. There's a lot more. And the more you explore relaxation, the more relaxation there is. But we don't necessarily recognize that. And so we're always in this constant state of stress. And then all of a sudden we find something like weed. And weed takes the stress off, immediately makes us, it helps us relax. And we're like, oh God, that's great. But then we start to come back down. We come back to our normal sober mindset and the tension comes back. And so we chase the weed again, not recognizing that it was the state of relaxation. It's just that we're tense all the fucking time, right? And so weed, we can just keep using that to try and escape it, but it doesn't work forever, as you know, right? As a lot of people know, is that if you're letting the weed do the work for you, eventually the weed just makes you lazy because you're just sitting there waiting for the weed to fucking change you instead of just changing yourself, relaxing, and then enjoying the weed. The weed can't relax you past your tension for long. Right. But anyway, back to the point, is psilocybin. This is an interesting case because what they're saying is that reprioritizing your life is a danger to the economy. That is an interesting message because they're not saying being lazy is a danger to the economy. They're saying reprioritizing your life because, again, they're only once in a while activities. It's not an ongoing habit of use. They're saying over a lifetime of use, this is equating to people wanting to work less overtime. So I find that really interesting. I'm very curious to see how people are going to respond to that, because I don't know if it's going to get much coverage, but I thought it was funny that cases of quiet quitting mushrooming, in quotes, like they were trying to make a pun or a play on words. It was just like, oh, come on. And then the study itself was just talking about overtime hours. It wasn't talking about quiet quitting at all. It was only talking about overtime hours. So it was a really interesting spin.
And because the overtime hours is something that, I don't know, is just such an explicit show of doing something, I guess, for that wasn't really. I was like, I wanted to cover that first and then get to the point I was thinking, and then I was like, fuck, I didn't have that much to say about that. Anyway, the point was with the prioritization of and the reprioritization of our perspectives, and just so you, I was almost seeing the economy and everything that we do with like marketing side of things and what people value, and you know, bigger house, spend more money on this, brand deals, blah, 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 as this entire like full cycle type thing of work, work, work. System gets some out of all that work. Why do we keep working? Because, you know, this idea of ourselves we're trying to build through the purchase, the external. And so it would make sense that as those shift, as, you know, people take mushrooms and again, not something that it's doing for you, but just allowing you to see, you know, a slight shift in perspective and then see your life a little bit differently. See that, you know, maybe this idea you've been building, you're able to like take a deep breath, come up for air, take a step back and see things just differently enough to have the opportunity to reprioritize. Because I know plenty of people who take mushrooms and don't necessarily reprioritize. It's still on the person doing it. Like you could have a one-time experience, give it all the mushrooms, all the credit, not do anything with it. And it yeah, maybe if you measured it, there's some brain chemistry rewiring to some degree, but in terms of coming down to you and the responsibility to do something with the experience, do something with the shift in perspective, like that's always on you. And so whether it's weed or whether it's mushrooms, it still doesn't do, it's not a replacement entirely. It's like a nudge, a push, a percentage of the way there, but it's not the entire thing in and of itself. Like, you know, so many things are pitched, but with the, with that focus on that, like how much there is the push for getting people to work and how many things are done. Like it made it seem, as you were talking, like it was all in together in like one sort of, like one mega company running all of it, from the having the work to selling the products, to having the work to selling the product, to pushing certain narratives, to maintaining certain narratives in the news, like to giving drugs to the people who are weighed down, like, which
that's what BlackRock and Vanguard, right? The two companies that own almost all of the world's currency, or at least the world's capital. Like they're invested in everything. And it makes you wonder, I mean, because again, that's pretty much a self-perpetuating cycle, right? They can create drugs that are meant to help us, that keep us sick, that keep us going back to the system, that offer us drugs, blah, 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 blah. Different story entirely. I don't know how we got down that direction. I did want to mention quickly while we're on the subject, though, of marketing, that in fact, we have no tickets left for our Vancouver retreat later this week, but we do have some tickets left for our upcoming Netherlands retreat. We're over halfway sold out. This is going to go fast. So if you can come to our Netherlands retreat, this is going to be a dope experience. It's going to be a lot of fun. There's going to be more community members in one place than we've ever had, which is going to be really interesting. There's going to be some retreat people, some people from previous retreats at this retreat. There's going to be a bunch of people who have never been to a retreat. And of course, there's going to be Andrew and myself and Amanda, who everybody knows. So it's going to be just a hell of an experience. Definitely get on board if you have the chance. Dualisticunity.com. Don't forget, Patreon supporters get just a hell of a good discount. Tier 1 gets $50 off. Tier 2 gets $150 off. And Tier 3 gets $350 off every retreat ticket. So it's definitely worthwhile if you enjoy coming to these retreats. That was pretty much all I had there. Where else shall we go with this conversation? Because admittedly, I'm a little baked, and I'm really, really excited about the episode that just went live before we started recording, which was called God Mode with Javier Hernandez. And that conversation is really interesting. We go through a lot of different things, or more importantly, Javier goes through a lot of different things, and then we kind of nudge him and he goes in different directions, and we explore a lot of territory in that conversation. But it's so interesting to talk to somebody who, again, it would be kind of like talking to somebody who spent their entire life mastering all stringed instruments. You'd be like, this is an interesting person. This is somebody who, in the realm of what they know, would be very interesting. But then if they went deeper and they turned it into what do they know about themselves during the course of mastery, that would be an incredibly deep conversation. And that's not something that I've generally experienced with a lot of athletes. And so to speak to Javier and to actually go into how everything is really a reflection of how he can learn about himself, that even being good at what he does and then having to face fame has given him a challenge just in his own life's journey. And so it's a great episode. Season 5, episode 13, it's called God Mode, and it's appropriately named. We talk about flow state a lot. It's a really good episode. I look forward to hearing everybody's feedback.
Yeah, it was a blast. And to your point, talking with someone who has kind of gotten to a spot where they've achieved sort of the supposed peak in a lot of ways, like he's seen as one of the best soccer players in the world right now, or football players, wherever you live. But even him seeing as, because he recently went through a pretty traumatic injury too, and he said it was very quick that he saw it as, and he admitted in our conversation that it was one of the best things that's ever happened to him. And he's like 36, so old for a player like that. And so it was cool to have the conversation just about the full picture of him and his life, the full picture of our lives, with someone who in a very specific sort of vertical of life has done and achieved a lot and seen in a certain way. And to be able to see even things that impact that, and seeing that, you know, the balance then between, you know, something that takes that away from him to some degree, then fills up some other bucket or perspective in his life, or allows him to see himself from a different perspective, or, you know, have a point of view on something that's a little bit different. And how many things, when you take it from the perspective of just experiencing everything from as many perspectives as you can, there's an appreciation for all the shifts in our experiences, right? And all the changes and all the things that we go through in differing perspectives that we're having. I'm enjoying Ray's switching of names. And there's an appreciation for the highs and lows, and kind of what you mentioned on a Patreon call a couple of days ago, just about how if we knew going in that there was nothing wrong with experiencing any degree of the experience, like whether it's a positive experience, negative experience, really, really uncomfortable experience, like we were just told going into this experience of life that you're going to go through all of it, and there's nothing wrong with going through any of it. It means nothing about you for going through it, but it's going to happen, and you're going to go through it all the time. Even when you think you're going to be on one side most of the time, you're still going to keep going through it. And so that alleviates some of the resistance to the experience and the thought of like, this shouldn't be happening. It's like, yeah, it's all going to happen to some degree in some way, shape or form. There's a little bit less resistance, and that keeps the things riding and flowing so much more easily.
Yeah, no, it was a hell of a good conversation. It was interesting because we kind of touched back and forth between like the role of the individual and the recognition that there really isn't one. I was going through some of my old TikToks the other day, and I run across one that was saying, you know, it can help to remember that you're not, the thoughts that you're suffering through aren't about you. They're about the illusion of you. And it's so funny because you can say something a million times and all of a sudden it'll click a little bit deeper, right? And it really is that. It's just the fact that the idea of you that your thoughts are always fixating on is never the reality of you. It just can't be. It's like, okay, so a little bit of weird, a bit of a weird way to explain this, but RAM. In your computer, you have two types of memory, basically. You have memory that gets stored permanently in terms of your hard drive, and then you have memory that is stored kind of temporarily in terms of RAM, right? Well, we're always kind of dealing with RAM. Like, we're dealing with temporary information, but we just keep loading it back in. Like, that's the whole thing. It's like we keep pulling it back from our memories and putting it in front of us, whereas we would just let it go and we would be on a clean slate. I don't know where I was going with that, but there was a point. There was a point to where I was going with that. And I think I've communicated it or not at all.
And so the RAM is, so it's kind of like the RAM that's built up is like the thoughts coming in, and that's kind of clouds the experience that is the baseline of what there is. And so if you keep going back to mechanisms of control and ideas that are maintained about certain things, and my opinion, it's like that slate never gets wiped clean. The RAM is always there to some degree, cycling in and out of different things, but never dropping to zero. And it's like when we have the experience of it dropping to zero, which I don't know, maybe happens at points during the day. There's the example of when we first wake up, there's not so many things. You're just that sort of more quote unquote pure awareness, or you don't have so many ideas that flood in, or just in moments of depth of questioning, or when you're super high or something like that, how just kind of curious how often it's like everything gets wiped, but then how quick is like the bounce off, and how long could you stay wiped when there isn't so much of an idea?
That's where I was going with that, was the fact that the idea of you is always temporary. Like, it's always just a small fleeting bit of information that gets cleared and then gets replaced with another idea of you. But just like any variable, it's just entitled me in quotes. So whatever it is, no matter what's within that container, no matter what the variable is representing, you're just seeing the variable name, me. But what's in that variable is changing all the time, but we don't recognize that, right? It's just the variable name just keeps getting replaced over and over again. If you were to wake up every day and rename yourself something else, imagine how that would change your mind. Like, today I'm Stan. Tomorrow I'll be Barbara, you know, and just for the sake of it. And why? Just to mix up your brain. What would happen if all of a sudden it couldn't just pin down what you do to a single individual name? What would you do? Think to yourself, well, on Tuesday, I was George. It'd be a very different way of thinking, but what's happening there? We're just changing the variable name instead of just getting stuck on one, Ray or Andrew or me or I, right? Because that's the variable name. But the contents of that variable are changing all the time. Right. And we just get stuck on the I, not the contents of that I. And the contents are always changing. So I think that's where I was going with the RAM thing, is the fact that I is really just a temporary variable, but it's a name that we continue to use. It's a variable that continues to change, but we don't see it that way because the name remains the same.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. The thought of changing the name every day, like, that makes it so much more difficult. Even the thought of, like, you know, from ages 0 to 10, you had a name. 10 to 20, you had a name. 20 to 30, you had a name. And, like, even if as a society we did that in the sense, or even, I don't know, if it was like a practice. And even right now, thinking about in my life, like, looking back, if every 5 years my name changed, it's like, fuck, dude, that's like, it's so much more easy to see the changes in yourself. Like, from 0 to 5, I was entirely different than I was from 5 to 10 or 10 to 15. And so it kind of was like, that was Andy 0 to 5, and then Drew 5 to 10, and then Andre 10 to 15, and then Androgovich.
Well, we even give operating systems version numbers, right?
Oh, fuck. Oh, shit. We're like an ever-changing operating function, operating system that doesn't change names ever. Like, imagine if, like, whatever Apple's things, they always name, like, funky names. Imagine if they kept changing it but just never changed the name. Like, that's kind of what we're doing, ins and outs of it, tweaks, whatever, but then we maintain that we think that that's still us. And so we almost just build on top of an idea that gets really heavy, as opposed to seeing the moment to moment to moment change. We see it as like a build. And then there's all this fucking deep shit that changed over time, but like, we've maintained it as part of the idea, as opposed to recognizing that, like, every day, every moment, I have the potential to be different, but certainly every, you know, month, year, 5 years.
Funny, it's just concepts. It's always concepts. It's the same thing we were discussing in our recent episode about relationships. You know, it's not the relationship itself. The reality of the relationship is just whatever's happening right now with that person, whether they're in front of you or otherwise. Like, that is the reality, your relationship with them. But the idea of a relationship, all of a sudden we are in a relationship. It's like, no, you're in relationship. Isn't it funny how just one simple word can change the entire sentence, right? It's like, no, we're in a relationship. What is that? You know, it's not an actual ship, right? Like, you're not actually getting into something. You're in relationship with one another in the same way you're in relationship with everyone else, right? Everything is relative. Everyone is relative. We are all in relationship. It's just that how long do our relationships last based on whether they reflect our growth or not, and how long are we holding on to them based on the concept that, no, a relationship should last, right? A relationship is what's good for us. Therefore, it's the length of a relationship that really dictates whether or not it's successful, whether or not it's a good relationship. It's like, not at all. It could be a very short relationship wherein both of you are enriched and move on with your lives. Right? So the success of a relationship has nothing to do with the concept of a relationship. relationship itself is something that's always happening. And the more you're involved with the action of it happening, and the more you are aligned in relationship with whoever it is you're talking with, the more you get out of that relationship, the more they get out of that relationship too, because you're more invested in it. It doesn't have to be a long thing. It can just be the moment that you're talking to them right then and there.
And it's like that shift from being in relationship to in a relationship, like the more that's given to, which I think you brought up in that relationship episode, to the relationship and the idea of the relationship, it takes away from being in relationship as opposed to a, and that's the idea of it. That's when that comes in and sucks some of the life out of relationship, which is always moment to moment, which is always here and now. And even in anything that's discussed, like I have a relationship with reality versus I have relation to reality, there's less of like a wall there almost. There's less of a me versus that, and closer to a connectivity there. And just from shifting from the action of it to it being an idea. And I guess that's the case of like, of us too. And I know Alan Watts, I think he talked once about like action verbs being what you are, like whatever you're doing, like I am speaking right now, like I am the act of speaking. That's closer to the reality of what I am than something that is speaking. And then there's less, even just in that, there's less space for an idea, and you're just continuing on as the thing without, and like, as soon as it's something else, I am something that is speaking to something else. There's like weight built from that, because now there's a right way, there's a correct way, there's things you do, there's things you don't do, there's ways you do it, there's ways you don't do it. There's all of these things that come into play when it's, you are something that is speaking, because then there's an idea of you, and then there's an idea of speaking, as opposed to no idea on either end, because there isn't any space if you are just the act of speaking itself.
You know, it's funny because that we're talking about you individually, but you aren't really an individual, right? You are in fact a collection of how many cells? Like, there's how many things that are moving around within you that make you possible? And isn't it interesting that all of them, save for their lacking awareness that they're doing these things, then again, who knows, could rightly say that they're doing anything that you're doing. Like, your pancreas could take credit for the meal that you cook, right? Your foot could take credit for walking down the street. Like, all of these individual cells within your body could go, that's me doing that. And they would be right. They would be right from a certain perspective. Despite their individual perspective that dominates their situation, they are still right in that they are collectively, it's just like humanity is collectively having an impact on the world. You are having an impact on the world, right? It's not we are collectively, any more than your cells are collectively moving your body around. You are moving your body around. It's just a matter of perspective. I just thought that was interesting.
Oh, very much so. Because if a cell in my foot took credit for the movement of the foot, it's like, to your point, it wouldn't be wrong, but how disempowered would it be? It's like it gets the credit for it. It is technically correct, but it's limited, and in extremely limited in that, despite it still being correct and how many things. So like, if you see me, Andrew, right now as that cell in the body of what's going on, it's like me taking credit for anything that happens. Sure, it's not technically incorrect in the way that a cell in your foot isn't incorrect in that it is walking, but it's such a limited perspective, and because it means something about me, it says something about me. And then so anything else that happens, then it's like if you stub your toe, it's like the cell in your foot takes all of the credit for that. And it's like, well, yeah, you're not wrong, but then, you know, you bear the weight of the other perspective of, you know, thinking that you're doing something wrong. And it's still just the entirety of what's going on doing it. Like, it's the entire body doing it. And so how do you avoid stubbing your toe so often? you maintain awareness, you know, you keep paying attention. And that's the most impactful thing you can do. It doesn't mean that you're not still going to stub your toe. And when you do, it's not, you know, your fault necessarily, but, you know, your awareness, your attention has far more impact on the rest of you than you think, because enough are paying enough attention. It's like there's way, way, way less collective stubbing of our toes and things like that, because there are certain things that with awareness and attention do shift the actions drastically, not in a correct way, but just in a different way. It's a little bit more attentive, a little bit more aware, so we don't go through so much unnecessary shit only because we're investing in, you know, a very limited perspective of ourselves and not paying attention because we're not seeing, we're just focused on ourselves as opposed to, you know, being all of awareness.
So on that note, I wanted to talk a bit about our 100th episode, because I was thinking about it after the fact. And I had a number of people reach out. And by 100th episode, I mean our 100th episode of Raw. Our two-year celebration, our two-year anniversary for Dualistic Unity as a whole, which is awesome. Very excited about that. By the way, if anybody hasn't yet and you would like to do so, we would love it if you would subscribe to our channel on YouTube. That'd be great. We're almost at 5,000 followers. Super useful and very, very helpful if you could do that for us. As always, we appreciate the support. Back to what I was saying, as you can tell, I'm just kind of circling around it. A couple of people reached out to me and they were reflecting on some of the comments I had made about your growth over the last 2 years. And they wanted to reassure me that I have grown as well. And I wanted to say, thank you. I really appreciate all of your thoughts, because there was more than a few people who reached out to let me know that I've grown. I wanted to say thank you, because it's an interesting conversation to have, because when you say I've grown, it's not that I would disagree with you. It's that my perspective is that it includes you. And so it's difficult for me to say Ray has in fact grown, though I would say as an extension of you, absolutely. In fact, if there's anything that I'm learning more and more, is just how to be an extension of you. And it's just by not needing anything myself. You know, it really is that. It's so interesting. So I just wanted to say thank you, first of all, because I appreciate all of your thoughts and I appreciate you reaching out and sharing your reflections with me. It meant a lot. I know. I just want to let you know. I do know. I know I've grown. I've known I have a lot. I know I have a lot more to grow through, for sure. But I can feel the ease in myself. I can feel how my own pace has changed. I can feel how so many of the things that I struggled to learn now seem more or less just like what is. It's not so much a conscious effort anymore. And it's less about the words. That's definitely one thing. I know I've been reflecting on this a lot in the last several episodes, but it's really not about the words. Whereas when I first met you, Andrew, I was trying to come up with the words that would communicate this as clearly as I could, not recognizing that it was my earnest desire to do so without being in the way that was communicating it better than anything I could have said.
And I couldn't agree more. Yeah, it's been, and now that you say it, it's been, and oh man. It's interesting for me because I think, see, like I've absolutely seen your growth in the sense of that shift from it trying to be anything to it not. Because I think the biggest impacts that you've had on me, which is fucking weird to say, is like not the words, despite how many conversations we've had. But like there are times when, you know, like, you will be like a minute or two late, and that has like weirdly more impact on me because I'm like, oh, he's not always on the ball all the time. And like from that perspective, because like we've worked so closely together and it's interesting, and like I gotta remember that we're like on a podcast and alive and not just having a conversation right now, because like I am more deeply reflecting on it, I think. But there's been a difference just because my point of view of you has shifted, and it's almost gone maybe in like the opposite direction of being able to see you more, not as like this idea that I had of you. Like I mentioned, for the first 8 months, like I straight up thought you were like Dalai Lama times Eckhart Tolle times Jesus sort of thing. And like, and obviously now we've just gotten like closer friends in a sense. And I think so it hasn't been this idea of like Ray always knows what to do and like how to do it and how to do it best, to seeing like more of the humanity, which is then, you know, as we talk about all the time, which is so funny, and the beauty in these retreats is if someone has an idea of you, the best thing you can do for them isn't maintain that idea. And so yeah, seeing, and I think it's gone hand in hand with, if you've felt like you've been realizing it's less about the words, and I've certainly more recently realized that. And I think maybe there's been, you know, a just matching, just because we communicate so often, in some of that shift and, you know, seeing things from a certain perspective, that because I'm like seeing it, I don't know, as I'm changing a lot, like I don't notice it as much, almost because it's like going in an inverse in a sense, or I don't even know how to describe it. I'm doing my best to do so, but yeah, I've certainly noticed, I think, when I have the chance to reflect on it, the growth you've shown, but like in a different way than I have, but at the same time not at all in a different way, like in the same exact way at the same time. So yeah, I just wanted to make sure that was known too.
I appreciate it for sure. And exactly, it's so interesting how it's just a different variation of a very similar journey, because that's all it is. Like the journey to yourself is really, it's always to yourself. It has that in common, right? It's just how it plays out is very different. And I want to say again to the community that when I think about my growth, quote unquote, I really do include you. Whether I've talked to you directly or not, whether you've been to a group or a retreat or not, if you're just listening to this and you are going through it, I'm a part of your growth. This conversation is a part of your moment-to-moment reality unfolding, and that moment-to-moment reality is you. You are reality unfolding, and I am just a part of that. That's all this is. And so my growth is your growth, and your growth is my growth. And so I'm grateful for everything that you do and everything that you're going through, especially when you don't feel like you're going to make it, especially when you feel like you're backsliding, or you're overwhelmed. Those moments when you feel like you can't go on, and inevitably they end proving you wrong, those moments mean everything, because that's where we all learn. That's where we all grow. And so we're on this trajectory towards growth, whether we recognize it or not. And it's just, I'm very grateful to be in a position where we have groups and we have our Discord and we have conversations fairly regularly with people who are willing to be vulnerable, people who are willing to express themselves, people who are willing to shed that self-protective shell of identity that we often hold on to that stops us from being able to recognize change. And because I'm in these conversations with these people who are being vulnerable, who are expressing their emotions, expressing their feelings, expressing their insights, I feel those waves. And they're like waves. They're like waves of not just emotion, but insight and change. And they affect me day to day to day. And so I am just in a very lucky position right now. I'm in a very blessed position. I feel like I'm living my life's dream, frankly. And it has nothing to do with achieving anything at all, but just being here with you, being here with you, the listener, whoever the listener is, because I'm being here with me and we're in this together. And it's not something that I need to tell myself. It's something that I know. We are growing together. It's an incredible thing. It really is. It's an experience unlike anything I think I could have communicated, because so often people want to believe it rather than it being the result of getting rid of all of the stuff that blinds you to the reality that we're always connected. You know, everything is connected. It's obvious when you're not blinding yourself by thinking about yourself as a singular part of everything. It really is that. So yeah, it's been a hell of a journey. I just want to say thank you again to everyone.
Beautifully said. It's crazy. Like what's going on? Like, and that shift from, because to your last point, belief versus experience. Like when it is your experience, there's no fucking belief. What the fuck would you believe in? There's nothing else. There isn't anything else that's going on. And so it's been incredible to see, like, to see the reflections of me doing it and both of us being seeing the reflections of myself doing it and see it, like actually seeing it play out in reality and in conversations. And in, I've had a few handful of random conversations with people that get into stuff like really quickly. And I always just start it with like, hey, how's it going? Like, whatever. How's your night go? Just a couple questions and boom, boom, like whatever it is, they get into something. And it's insane to see. Cause like just talking to myself and seeing that and seeing the shift and the change actually happen and the impact from just not needing anything from them, like not needing anything and just allowing myself to act. Like it's always been a need because of a need for myself. There's always been some degree of need out of something, which has hindered every experience because I needed to just to play out in a certain way because I'm afraid of something playing out in another way. It's like without that fear of it playing out, of you playing out, because there's nothing else for it to be played out besides just yourself here and now. Like your experience here and now is like the extent of all of it. And so seeing, as you know, the less I need to get something from someone else through any interaction in any way, or even get them to act differently if I think they should act differently, it's like just letting them be what they are. Doors start opening, conversations start happening, and even just in the slight relaxation of being, you know, willing to be a little goofy or something, you see things just like actual changes playing out very interesting.
Well, it's so interesting because when you're letting somebody be who they are, you're really letting yourself be who you are. Like that's what you're trying to do in changing somebody else, is you're trying to change your reality because you are uncomfortable. So you're trying to change you. So you're trying to change them. It's trying to change you. And so to let somebody else just be what they are is to actually accept yourself as you are. Is to say, like, I don't need to change that. I don't need to have control over that. That is not something that's influencing me, right? I am free of that, right? Which is really just free of your own need to get involved, your own need to you know, be better, to live up to that should. So it's always really interesting because it's just, it always comes down to the same thing. It's why I find it funny. Like we have policies in schools against bullying, but we don't have any policies in school against over-identifying with your grades, you know, like, or anything else. It's like, you know, yeah, lord that over the other kids. Oh, what'd you get on your test? You know, like, who else hated that question? And it's not that I didn't do well in the test. It's just I hated the question because now all of a sudden either somebody's going to feel better than you or worse immediately upon telling them the answer. What a stupid thing to do, like in general, right? But we're never, you know, cautioned against that. Like, don't take your grades too seriously. They don't really mean you're smarter than everyone else just because you get straight A's. But a lot of people took it that way.
Oh yeah. It's like that was at least 50% of the schooling experience was like, how are your grades? How is this kid's grades? How, like, my schools had lists that came out every semester. Like there was the high honor roll, the regular honor roll, and then, you know, as the years went by, they made more and more roles for people to make, so the list got bigger and bigger and bigger. And yeah, I mean, people stopped even paying attention to them. But yeah, it's like, god damn, that fucks a kid up having things like that. And it was like, I mean, for anything, just the measurement, like in elementary school, we had like the physical fitness award, the national fitness award, and you had to do certain amounts of things, run a certain speed, do a certain amount of pushups, whatever, to get certain things. And like, you know, there could be the perspective, oh, well, physical, but no, there's no difference in like that measuring of children, be it grades or anything. And I'm curious then with something like sports, where it's competition, like that to some degree is building a sense of self. It's just how much of a detrimental impact is it having? Because there is a component of, you know, a team getting a trophy versus an individual, like the weight of the perception of self in that. Like if you're I'm curious if there is a way to wonder about that, if like an individual athlete versus an athlete that plays for a team has a different impact based on that perspective, or how, I guess identity is identity at the end of the day, and like anything that reinforces it could be reinforced in so many different ways. But like just how much, I guess not even whether it's like, oh, our sport's good or bad or whatever, good or bad. It's just the things that we do as kids to reinforce the sense of me, the sense of self, the sense of measurement. And your point with the question of like, what'd you get on something, like the only time I felt decent when that question was like asked or said or whatever, if it was the same grade. Someone got the same grade, then it's like, all right, we got each other, versus like there's always the dichotomy in any other way. And it's like, oh my god, what a fucked up way for kids to grow up, just with a daily measurement. Like holy fuck, school is like, oh my god, it's like a moment-to-moment measurement almost, like day-to-day, week-to-week, just measuring. Where am I? How do I fit? Where do I, like, holy Christ. It's just like a system of measuring to reinforce a sense of self, like reinforce a sense of me. Oh my God.
And make sure you have a certain set of skills by a certain endpoint, because then you are ready for the world. And I find that really funny. Go back to your idea about sports really quickly. Isn't it interesting? Like, there's nothing wrong with any of what we do. It's just the holding on to the variable, right? Like it's just the holding on to the name of the team, for example, that people all of a sudden become generational fans of a certain team, despite the fact that the team is changing every year, sometimes multiple times a year. So they're not actually fans of any particular team because the team is always changing. Right. And so it's really just, again, a fan of the variable. What if we were to just occasionally scrap the variables and start over? You know, this is something that's true for the political spectrum as well. Like in the US especially, you have a two-party system, occasionally a three-party system, but it really is a two-party system. It goes back and forth. And people hold on to those containers because their parents were Republicans, their grandparents were Republicans, blah, 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 blah. The point is they're holding on to the variable, again, despite the fact that the Republican Party has changed, not only in terms of its membership, but its fucking purpose, the mentality that drives it. And the same is true for the left. Right. But we don't look at that. We just look at the variable, and often in contradiction to the other side that we also have in mind as a variable. And so we've lost all nuance. But if you were to constantly have, like, every 4 to 8 years, it's like, well, you have to introduce a new party with a new platform. And then people would have to get behind that and actually start to build that party's argument. It would be a very different kind of race. Right. But this is it, is that it's not that there's anything wrong with what we do. It's just that we forget about how identity kind of gets involved and distorts everything. It creates consequence because we take it too seriously after a long period of time. Doesn't even have to be a long period of time if we're really looking for that way of feeling better about ourselves. Right. So I think embracing impermanence, embracing the temporary in our systems, in what we do, would change a lot of our mentality. You know, I'm not saying go so far as to call yourself a different version of Andrew every year, but to recognize that, in fact, you are.
Straight up, like, imagine changing, being able to change your name every day. Like, how hard would it be to maintain those things? And I really like that point about sports or political systems or anything that's maintained. Because if you bring that up, if you bring that point up, it's like, why wouldn't we do that? If they are changing, it's like, well, because then I'd have to sit and think about what to do. I'd have to actually think for my fucking self instead of following the thing, because the thing that's being maintained is the thing that's followed. So I don't have to think for myself. And if that were to shift, then I'd be forced to think for myself about the thing I'm relying upon to stop thinking about myself. And like, holy shit, if those things change, there wouldn't be the ability to just go through it. Because how many people, like, one side or the other, political system, sports team, whatever, just follow their parents and their parents' narrative because they see them in a certain way and then they act in a certain way and then they, you know, see that as where, you know, their value comes from. And then it's like this sort of reinforced thing. So there's going to be a massive bias to want to follow that. But if it was changing, then there'd have to be a willingness to relearn everything about it. And how many things with any sort of system is almost like the memory hard drive versus RAM thing. Like, the system over time has more and more things that are shoved in the memory. So people don't even like necessarily understand those sides. They're just built in to the system. And then there's certain new things that are kind of like slightly in flux year to year or every 5 years, or things that shift more often. But without that, then there's certain perspectives that people don't, as they, you know, grow up, even necessarily look at or focus on. So they're focusing on less and less of the entire pie of what that system entails, because there's just an unwillingness to want to look at it, or it's just built into kind of who you are. And because you don't want to question who you are, you don't want to question the system that reinforces that. And so there is, if it's seen as knowing yourself, if it's seen as maintaining an idea of yourself as being beneficial, or, you know, the quote unquote right way to act, then questioning anything that causes you to question that idea of yourself is not going to be pushed at all. So the questioning of the deepest things are the things that are pushed to question the least, you know, be it a politician, you know, how many times one side or the other do they do some really fucked up shit and they just like glaze over whichever side the person falls on because they don't want to question that. It's like, oh, well, you know, devil you know versus devil you don't know. And then with religion, obvious, that's like the number one principle of religion is don't question, literally. Like, you're going to go to hell if you question too much. And so how many things of the deepest things do we not want to question based on how deeply it reinforces our sense of ourself?
You know, it's funny. I always thought, if there must be a commandment, it's a good one. Like, right after thou shalt hold no god before me is thou shalt not have a religion. I think that wouldn't be really good. And only just because that is religion. Like, as we've talked about before, you know, religion, the etymology is to bind together. But religion, as it's currently practiced, is a bunch of different variables that everybody's trying to shove themselves into and then judging the other variables as being incorrect as a path to God, right? So they're all just jumping into variables. But those variables in themselves are stopping the people within them from actually being together in uncertainty, in reality, outside of the conceptual variable, outside of the conceptual box that is that religion. They would find that the world itself is what binds us together. The experience of existence itself is what binds us together. So it's really interesting how, again, like, the concept, it distracts us from the reality. Like, we start to forget that the concepts were made as a way of kind of communicating the reality. And instead we start thinking about the concept as the reality. We lose sight of the reality entirely. You know, like, even just the words human being, perfect example. Right? Like, there's a lot there. There's a lot there, specifically the word being, right? Like, you are being, you are a being, you are something that is being in this moment right now, existing. But immediately you use the word human and it's just like the word tree. You're like, that's a tree. this is a human. That's human shaped. Therefore, it's a human. It's like, what does that mean, though? That doesn't tell you anything about the reality of being a human being. It doesn't tell you anything about the reality of your existence at all, except your shape. How many appendages you're most likely going to have. You know, but that's all it tells you is the variable, not the content. And so we get really caught up, you know, in the variable names, and we forget that the content inside is, it's not just one piece of information. It's this ongoing piece of information. It's this multidimensional array that never ends. So much information, you can never possibly get to the bottom of it. And that's all within that variable. But we look at the variable and we think that it's one thing. And we operate as such, like that one thing, you know, is something we need to protect. But it's just a temporary it's a temporary variable. It's changing all the time. We just keep using the same name, whether it's God or ourselves.
Yeah, it's almost like if there's a thing, you know, flowing by or latching by, if we stick to one thing, it's like we go with it. Like we stick to the thing, like it's a conveyor belt. We stick to the thing and we keep going, and we see things as stagnant. But then if we don't latch on and we like separate ourselves an inch, then it's just everything passing by, and then we are maintained as the change. And without the ability to hold on to, you know, a specific perspective of yourself, like there aren't as many thoughts going on anymore. And that's like kind of uncomfortable at first but there's no weight to it. It's like flying, kind of, where you're just where you're at. You're not focused on some idea of what's happening, some perspectives that kind of span out from being here and now. And like, if you're just being, like, there's nothing else that you are outside of the experience that you're having. And so all of the thoughts then come up almost as you're here, and like they pass through, but like all you can see is the thoughts that span through here and now, and you see them passing through, as opposed to that perspective spanning out on the thoughts. Cause it's like, as it's almost like, how do I do this on the video? As they span out from the thoughts, they get smaller. As they span out and the focus becomes on the thoughts, it's like the view, not of the thoughts, gets smaller. And then as the view that isn't focused on the thoughts gets wider, the view of the thoughts gets smaller. And it's kind of like an inverse relationship. The more attention you're paying to where you're at, it's straight up more difficult for thoughts to come into play. And then as the focus starts to shift towards the thoughts, it gets really, really difficult to pay attention to where you're at as you focus on that. But it can be a moment to moment shift. It's just how much investment you have in what's behind all of those thoughts and the perspective, the illusion that they could, there is an end to that. They do get you somewhere. There is something to think about. There is certainty to be had. There is control to be had. And see, all of those things are reasons for the focus to be on the thoughts versus where you're at. But without all of those reasons for all of those things, the thoughts don't make as much sense. And you start seeing reality for what it is. And you start actually being in the spot that you're in, having the experience that you're having. And then you're just continuing to do it without so many thoughts. And you see that all of the weight came from the thoughts, the things that you maintained in your head. Like your entire experience of having a certain perspective of yourself can only be maintained if you utilize thoughts. And without the thoughts being there, it's like you can continue stepping through because you know there's not going to be in the future so much attachment to that in the perspective that you have here and now. You know, of course, I'm not saying that's actually necessarily how it plays out all the time, but when you're not focused on thoughts, you see so clearly that all of the weight comes from those thoughts. There isn't a fear to step through so much because something, you know, you stumble, you fall on your face. There isn't some weight to be maintained unless you buy back into the thoughts. But if you maintain your focus just where you're at, you could fall flat on your face and slide for like thousands of miles and then get back up and then just keep walking. Like you can fuck up that many times and there's no concern, and then there isn't, and then it all fucking goes together, and then it's all hand in hand and hand in hand, and then you relax a little bit more because you know there isn't any weight if the focus isn't on the thoughts and the mechanisms of control. And so there isn't so much, there aren't so many reasons not to relax. And like, those are all building the reasons to not relax. And if you're, there aren't so many, then you're just relaxed. Then it's kind of like this perpetuating process of just continuing to go, but not because you're doing anything correctly or well, but just because there's no fear or hesitation, no matter what plays out.
Exactly. Just be yourself. That's what you can do. That's all, in fact, you can do. You can try to be yourself, but that's a fiction. You can run from who you are, but that's a fiction too. So at the end of the day, you're just stuck with being you. And the sooner you embrace that and settle with uncertainty, the sooner you'll see what you're capable of. Right? Going to mention it again. Go and check out the latest episode, God Mode, with Javier Hernandez. Fantastic episode. We are going to wrap up here and we're going to continue on in Patreon in 15 minutes, a tier two call today and then a tier three call after that. Our tier three calls are 2 hours long. They are a unique opportunity to really deep dive on stuff and talk to people who have been in the community for a while. If you're looking for a smaller conversation that's not a one-on-one but does involve the community, and you're looking for, you know, a little bit more privacy, then tier three is definitely the tier that I'd recommend. And you get, again, sick discounts on our retreats. But this has been a blast. It's good to have you back in quote-unquote North America, Andrew, and I'm looking forward to seeing you at the upcoming retreat on Thursday. We're going to sign off here. I'll pass it to Andrew, but thanks for joining us, everyone.
Yeah, this has been a blast. It's good to be back in close to the same time zone, and very excited for our Patreon chat a bit. Probably going to smoke a little bit more weed beforehand, and I'll see everyone there shortly.
Bye, everyone.